everybody. Welcome to Babs Buzz. Good to have you back. I hope you survived a holiday. If you celebrated, I know I did. I had a great time. We had five generations of family. It was amazing. This time we're going to do something a little different with Babs Buzz, as you know, because you participate in it. Thank you so much. You guys are so awesome to me. I can't even tell you. This is a little different because I really had to, kind of think this through a little bit more than I usually do, mostly because I didn't want to just say yes or no, although I will tell you that a couple of questions I did just say yes or no. So I sent the list of the questions to Michael. You know, Michael is so great. He takes care of me throughout the show, and we decided that we're going to let you guys see the questions so that you can then see the and hear the answers, and hopefully it'll just make a little bit more sense. But I'm also going to read them to you, and I may slightly abbreviate the questions because some of them did tend to be a little bit long, and I didn't want to really get into the meat of the question if I got to the gist of it more quickly. So here we go. We're going to start with question number one. What stories can you tell us about scripts that started out as small, innocent things and grew into different creatures? Monstrous deviants, other than their original scripts. I immediately thought of Laser Bladers. Let me tell you guys about Laser Bladers. LaserBladers.com. Laser Bladers came to me, and you can look it up, by the way, came to me as a novel, an award-winning novelist, fiction novelist, guy goes to my church, of all things. His name is Lee Garrett. He's just a sweet man. He's handicapped. Actually, he is retired. He's disabled from the military. He served our nation with honor. And he's just a really, really nice man. He sings, he plays guitar and all that stuff. He wrote a book called Laser Bladers. It started out about these college kids and a dream. It really was quite a dream. It was a metaphor for something altogether different. And I liked the book very much. I helped him with some edits and some rewrites. But when adapting, I have to tell you, let me digress for a minute. Novelists don't write screenplays for a reason. They're used to exposition. They're used to a lot of noise on the page, and that's cool. That's how it's supposed to be. But screenwriters, when you hand them a book and they look at it, they all of a sudden, their DNA, their screenwriting DNA kicks in, and they can see and they can hear exactly what should be on the page, right? So I send it over to a couple of writers that I know, and one of them said, I'd like to do this. And he said, and if it's okay with you, I'm going to take this script and I'm going to make it all about the skating rink. So in short, he took this script and he turned it into a kind of Tron skating rink for kids. And these kids go skating. One of their friends gets kidnapped and there's three dimensions total. There's the reality total, there's the dreamscape total, and there's the nightmare total of the, in terms of scenes. So there's three scenes total. So you've got nightmare, dreamscape, and reality. Those are your three sets, but it's all in one place. So the CGI people can do, you know, obviously different lighting, different music, different costumes. Some of the guys in the nightmare are going to look very different. So this thing that went from this college dream, this guy dreaming in a college library, falls asleep at the desk. I mean, who doesn't in college, right? And reading books, sometimes you just conk out. I know I did. Turned into this wonderful tweener flick with these sort of weird monsters and a killer motorcycle scene in the end. Robert Powers did an amazing job. So that happened with Laser Bladers. That's the only script that I have that's happened with, but I bet in Hollywood and around the world, people who are developing pictures, that happens a lot. Question number two, I'm going to skip because I just deleted it. Question number three is, why do people who work for the craft get treated so poorly on set? My answer to that is I honestly don't know. I'm going to give you the quarter here. I'm going to give you one side that's good and one side that's bad. Everyone in this business is treated poorly. There's so many wannabes and hangers-ons and morons who know nothing about running a business and idiots who just think the world owes them something, and writers who think they've written something mustn't be changed or else they take their ball home. Now, they think because of the status of what this business gives and the perk of meeting celebrities, they could be a little more snarky than the average business. Well, I can tell you that that doesn't happen with everyone. I give you G. Anthony. G. Anthony is a producer we're working with on a picture. It's a big budget picture. The guy's a doll. And what he does is, it's so extraordinary, kids. I tell you, it's absolutely lovely. You know what he does? He issues a memo. And in this memo, you know what he does? He tells everybody, this is how it's going to be. This is what we do. This is how we do it. And if you don't like it, tell me now because I'll find your replacement. And he doesn't do it in a mean way. He doesn't do it in a snarky way. He does it in a way that it makes everyone all of a sudden feel like, wow, we're all on the same footing. We're all in this together, you know? It's very cool. Question number four. Seriously, though, does it help to pitch a script if you have sequels in mind? This speaks to item number one, which we just talked about, Laser Bladers. I have to tell you, in my world, franchises are always attractive, but really it comes down to what makes money, who's available, and how it shakes out. Remember, I trap lightning. So when I read something that I think may have franchise legs, I will point that out to a producer or a director when I do the pitch. Question number five, if I add the word 3D to the end of my script, will it get more reads? No. What genre, question number six, what genre is going to be hot in the spec world next year? You tell me. And when you tell me, don't put it on the thread. Send Michael an email privately to me and then send it to me so that I know. Kind of like buying stock, you know, insider trading. I have no idea, but I do know this. Unique stories and voices and hooks always get their day to shine. Number seven. I think my scripts are definitely not for everyone. Gee, I know who wrote this question. Any suggestion for writers who do weird stuff that most people don't like? Well, my pat answer for that is shoot it yourself. I think it's brilliant that someone wants to write off the curve. But I will also say this about that, which speaks to question number eight. Should these writers change their way or continue to write what feels good to them, real to them? In my opinion, abstract is as abstract does. If you live by abstract, you're going to die by abstract. But look at Headpin and the Angry Itch. I mean, who knew, right? Who knew that that would be such a sort of a closet picture? It's just, pardon the pun on closet, but it's just hysterical. Rocky Horror was a lot like that, you know? I don't know that you're that weird. Having people on board to shoot weird, it happened on the set of Seven. I mean, you look at that film and you listen to the dialogue and you look at the lighting and what the director did, that is beyond bizarre. It's one of those things that begs the question, who was dreaming this up? You know, that's what I think anyway. Question number nine, what's the appropriate turnaround time for a script? I'm going to talk about Robert Powers again, the guy who wrote Laser Bladers. He is at the time unproduced and everyone rates him. I just do not get it. It's frustrating. It's frustrating because he's actually done with a script draft, usually in 4 weeks, and does his polishes and gets them done by 12. And then we do note sessions back and forth, tweaking, dusting, taking out a word, adding a word, fixing a comma, period missing here, that kind of thing. Taking out a couple of directions, that sort of stuff. He's very nimble in the way he responds to coverage and notes. He really listens. He doesn't apply everything all the time, but he really listens. And I mean like active listening, not just yeah, while he's thinking up his answer. That takes him roughly 4 weeks for draft, 12 weeks for polish, and then he'll play with it for the year. I'm repeating myself for a reason. We have one script that it did go on a little longer, but that was a different kind of piece. It was a period piece. And so, that did take a little bit of time, and Laser Bladers did too. But you should, if you can write a script in a month, great. If you can polish it in 12, even better. I have one writer who can write a script in a matter of days, and then all he's doing is dusting and polishing and adding. So it's, everybody's really different, I guess. Question number 10. There was part of that question number 9 that I didn't get. So if you want to if you read it and you know it's yours, you want to elaborate, go for it. Put on the thread. Question number 10, same question, but for rewrites. ASAP has lost its meaning. How much time is asking too much? Well, I'm the worst. I'm really a slave driver with my writers, and they'll tell you that. They sometimes will lock horns on it. For me, it's case by case now, because if you're on the clock, for example, for a producer, you got to produce. You got to hustle. Sometimes they'll give you a couple of hours. Sometimes they'll give you a day. And sometimes you just have to be able to rewrite on set, you know, even if you're doing it by Skype. So it really just depends on the individual production, how much money's involved, where your head is at for the picture, if they're paying for a polish, because, you know, you've got to be paid for your work. And that's where I come in. WGA, in short, doesn't like anybody rewriting for free. So we work it into the deal when we set it up so that everybody's expectation is the same. Pretty much like what I was saying about G. Anthony, we set it up from the beginning. Question number 11, what makes people in your position balk? Ah, that's so easy. Noisy clients, liars, and folks who tell me, yeah, be candid, and then turn right around and blast me to one of my associates going, yeah, she doesn't know what she's, you know, that kind of thing. Please know that I'm not perfect. I know it sounds that way, right? Har har. But what makes me balk is when you're a total phony. I mean, why would you be like that? Just use your head, be yourself. I'm going to see through it anyway. I'm very, very good with the one-on-one. So just try and tell me what your fears are when you're talking about rewrites, what you're afraid is going to happen, and I'll talk you off a ledge. Question number 12. Do you think there are many stories that have been told enough by now? This is a really good question. Because every romantic comedy, one way or the other, is the same. You know, there's 100 vampire movies. So probably not. And the second part of that question is, in that a script about a certain subject will not be read because there are so many like it. That happens, of course, and it's really too bad. I got my hands on a great low-budget vampire movie, and it may languish, but for the actors who may eventually star in it, it's going to be great. But what I'm saying is that you could do a rom-com 100 ways, but when you find that one unique hook, like Knocked Up, and you make it different, guess what you've got? You've got a hook, and that attracts actors and directors. 13. When working with an agent, is it more important to have a single property or package deal? I like a writer with arsenal. 14. Is it more about constantly developing new ideas and keeping polishing that one apple? I could tell you that new hooks are always going to get the shining light of the day. Any unique voice, fresh ideas. It's all about I saw it first in this business. Whoever sees it first wins. 15. Which client do you think has a better chance in your stable? I like people with an arsenal. I mean, if you have two comedies, two rom-coms, two sitcoms, I mean, not sitcoms because we don't do TV. If you have two thrillers, that kind of thing, oh, I'm excited because now I've got variety. Here's the thing about variety, though. It's very interesting that you ask this question because Craig Clyde, my client, he can write comedy and he can write thriller, but I get his voice. It's very hard to describe. I wish you guys could read 5 or 10 pages of each of his scripts. And you might see what I mean and hear what I mean. It's very extraordinary. It's really, I'm quite blessed to have that kind of a client. Let's see, what's next? 17. The one with a fistful of ideas in development but registered them up. Well, I've signed writers who get passes. You know, I've told you this in the past. I've signed them to help them along, and some will rally and others lose steam. It's very hard on a person's brain to hear no constantly. So if you can do rewrites going in, and in other words, if you love, and I mean love the craft of writing, oh my gosh, this is so much fun, but it's very hard. So you gotta get your yayas somewhere else. Like if you love roller skating, go roller skating. You know, if you love bowling, go bowling. If you love, you know, soccer, go play soccer. But don't put all your eggs in one basket and honestly, I hate to use the cliche, but it's so true. Screenwriting is akin to the lottery. If you get lucky like a Juno, yay! I hope I'm your agent when that happens. Number 17, we did. 18. Do coverage providers offer those services for script treatments as well as scripts? I wouldn't bother on a treatment. It's just not necessary. Once you start fleshing it out as a script and the characters start talking, then coverage really comes in handy. 19. Is it viable to pitch a writer to executives with only a treatment or synopsis? Well, one of my clients sold a treatment for $50,000. So if you have one, good. Let me know. The elevator pitch is huge, and you better have it ready, because if Vince Vaughn's in the elevator with you and you've got a baseball picture that you want to pitch, he's the guy to do it too. And you just better make sure it's registered with the WGA first. What qualities in a script inspire you to take a chance with a new client? Ryan Lee is a perfect example of how to hook me. Write a solid story with roles that actors want to play, lines they want to say, and convey that story with great voice on the page. And when I ask you for tweaks, which I did of Ryan, I asked for a couple of tweaks, just give it to me. 21. How would you segregate or differentiate categories of producers in your company's services, big, medium, small, etc.? Well, the truth of the matter is in my business, ICM and CAA are everything. I'm non-existent. As far as they're concerned, us boutique agencies out here, franchised by the guild, are not important to them. What's important to them, and rightfully so, are their clients, or their stable of clients, or the writers that they're finding, and their readers that they hire. Because my agency is small, I can still pretty much get anywhere I want. I can't get into Playtone, and I'll repeatedly call Playtone, even if they tell me that they won't hear a pitch, because that person who turned me down in September may be gone by October. And it is a business, because that's how I look at it. So I put my energy where I'm going to get a return. However, I have stopped calling Playtone for the time being because I'm not stupid. Having said that, I can get to pretty much anybody. And there's a comfort for them in their predictability, meaning Playtone. Same thing goes for Pixar and Disney. This is why they develop so much from within. They know each other so well. There's a high comfort level, and you can be an idiot with people who you trust. I can be an idiot with my husband because I trust him, that kind of thing. Question 22. At Simply Scripts, we see moderate amount of absolute new material. Likewise, do you have a fair percentage of new producers coming at you? In many, you know, it's funny that you say that. In many ways, I'm a noob or a newbie because I'm kind of not. I've been in so many different branches of show business my entire life. This one's a natural extension, I guess, of who I've become over time. And I'm very good at not putting my foot in my mouth. Silence works for me in many instances, so no one would really know that I don't have a clue about something. But if I don't have a clue about something and I hear something, I'll make a mental note and I will find the answer so that if it comes up again, I won't be clueless. You know, like I didn't know what a red eye camera was, so I went to people who know and they told me. You can be a newbie. You can be green. Just try not to stay that way. And don't lead with your chin. Occasionally, sometimes, or rarely, was second part of that question 22. My buddy and I got a camera, no script, what you got, that I know you got, buddy. It's the quote that was in the question. I'm not exactly sure what that means, but I will say this. I try to do what Blake Snyder did for me. Blake Snyder, I watched him. He would say to people, no, but, no, but. He would say, no, it's not working. That log line, that synopsis is not working, but here's how you can fix it. So we try to do that all the time. 23, would you consider producers pretty good at what they do, or do you run across the gamut? My answer is that they amaze me because I could never do what they do. I'm sure many of them stink at what they do, but from where I sit, I have not met one producer who's like that. I just haven't. It looks like I typed number 24 in error, and so you guys may see it as question number 25. And the question is, across the 5 years you've been doing this, what desired product trend have you noticed? I hate to say it, but I'm seeing lazy writers, lazy editing, folks who don't want to hear that they need their script fixed. And that's growing. And I think that's because they perhaps being on the perimeter of what the business actually is and not trying to learn about what it really, really is deep down, I think they're doing themselves a disservice, don't you? I mean, if you want to get in something new, if you start bowling, you're not going to stand there with a pair of ice skates. You're going to get bowling shoes, right? Okay. Let's see. Next question is trends, I believe. What trends has been, I think this is part B to question number 25. That's based on my notes. That's what I'm going to say. Oh yes. Mr. Silver's been doing this a while longer than you, right? Yes, he has. He told me to tell you this, you guys. He thinks that in the business of show business, he seems to feel and see a more adversarial posturing than he used to. He's also easily bored by scripts he reads. He'll read 5 pages and literally stop and he'll set it aside and say, this is just crap. He's not diplomatic at all. He may get to page 10 occasionally, and then he'll say, you're boring me. I can't look at this. I'm done here. In fact, it's gotten to the point where Ed doesn't even read scripts anymore unless I insist on it. He basically handles all the contract negotiations, the WGA paperwork, the budgets, and all the legal paperwork we have to file with the WGA. And it's what's funny about all this is he hates it when writers treat me badly. I'll tell him when writers snark me and what happened and why, and he gets very protective, which is really kind of nice. 26, it seems you've hit the market at a very unique part of time in history. You were doing this a few years before unemployment started bouncing around 10%. Yeah, but you have to remember when I started, there was a strike on. So I started this business and I was in the desert. Are you seeing every Tom, Dick, and Harry without a day job all of a sudden banging out material all over the quality spectrum? My answer is I've not seen that happen, no. If so, does it make the industry more daunting being choked with more product of previous quality? I don't know if that's a typo or not. There is very little quality. I can tell you that's my answer, truly. There's just too many scripts, and they're all terrible. People that are pitching pitch far too soon. I can get completely hooked on a pitch, and then the script is god-awful. And you feel bad because every pitch you read, you're dying to love it. I mean, you just are. You get excited. You open up the envelope. Dear Barbara, let me tell you how I came up with this idea. They do everything right. The pitch is terrific, and the script, it bombs. from page one. I have people who to this day do a 38 point font on the cover page. When I was young, 38 point font. Okay, sorry. Until you're Cameron, you do 12 point courier font like everybody else does. We're not going to think you're colorful. You know what we're going to think? We're going to think that you don't care enough about tradition or this craft to do it right. And then you put copyright, all rights reserved. Hello, screaming green again. Don't do that. All right. So, yes, there is too much quality and not enough quantity. Is the coverage, this is all part of it, looks like question 26. Is the coverage business doing pretty well? I don't know. I don't do I only do coverage for my clients. I used to dance on the head of a pin when it came to their egos. I don't do that anymore. I tell my clients, fix it, or it's your hiney. I'm not going to worry about it. Or I'll tell them, I kick the script back to them and I tell them it's not ready to shop. I'm not going to shop it. Let me tell you a story about Beth Grossbard. She's an amazingly brilliant executive producer, member of the Directors Guild. This woman is one of my Yodas. Okay, I go to her when I have a question or I need some help, when I need some coaching and some counseling. I also adore her because she's hilariously funny. She's very, very, very sweet, and we converse well together. We seem to have a lot in common. She has a picture that, in my opinion, is going to be a monster hit. Would I go see it? No, it's not my kind of picture, but it's going to be huge. And she sent me the script, and she said, Barbara, give me your notes on it, which I was really flattered to do. I mean, this is a woman who has access to everybody. So she sends me the script, and I read it. And I said to her, listen, I'm going to be really candid here. So here it is. And I got the nicest thank you note from this woman. She said, first of all, I don't want to sound conceited, Barbara. This is Beth talking, but the notes you gave me were almost identical, almost word for word to what I told them. And I said, well, tell me how that shakes out. Explain to me what you do. She said, oh, we have a notes session and it's supposed to be an hour and it often goes to 5 or 6 or 7 hours. It's grueling. It's horrible. People argue. It gets contentious. Why I am telling you all this is for this reason. If you can't take rewrites, darling, pick a different business, right? So if one of the things you have to realize is it's not just you here screaming in space. You're going to be sitting in a room with a committee of people who are paying to get this thing shot. So you got to be open to change. And there's some battles you're going to want to, you know, fight. And there's some things you're going to take to your agent and say, I'm not yielding on this. You better be sure. That's all I'm saying. You better be sure. Question 27. What does the agent industry buzz about behind closed doors? I can tell you what we laugh at in my office. The way I make coffee is absolutely terrible. we laugh about people who wear way too much gold when they pitch us at a pitch fest. I'm sorry, but the guy with the Scorpio medallion that was the size of my fist, and it was black t-shirt and this really black hair dye, it's so bad. All I kept thinking was, okay, is someone punking me? Where is Ashton Kutcher? When they do that, I find it to be quite extraordinary. We make fun of each other all the time in the office. My assistant, Anna, who's also my sister-in-law, she reads for me. She's my horror girl. There isn't anything about horror she really doesn't know. I mean, she's just my go-to. And when I go on Pitch Fest, if she can make it, she's my barrier. Because some people just get too friendly and they start, you know, they kind of don't leave you be for a while. It's kind of bizarre, but, you know, she'll stand between me and whoever's coming at me far too frequently. She'll look me right in the eye and she'll go, if you want me to throw down, I will. She's perfectly straight faced, but she has not yet had to throw down, at least to date. Hill freaking hilarious, though, really funny. We don't gossip about the industry. We don't talk about stuff. We don't talk about who's on drugs and who's failing. We don't talk about politics. We don't talk about religion. We talk about story. We talk about who's helping who with rewrites. We talk about what's going on with certain scenes. We're just too busy reading scripts to be farting around with, you know, that kind of that kind of noise. Question 28. What would writers be surprised to know about many of the producers that come to you? Oh, how full of crap they are. We're going to skip 29. I deleted question 29. Question 30, what are some of the professional disasters that other agencies have before them? I don't know. I could tell you personally, I have hit a wall with disgust. I can take heat all day about my client and their work, and I can even take heat about me, but I don't want to hear it from someone who doesn't know jack about this business. I really don't want to hear it. I do not have a poker face, which is why I cannot pitch a script I do not love. I can't do it. I've been beaten about by the head and neck in this business, and Ed and Debbie and Richard Broadhurst don't like this. And they literally will tell me, you have got to stop helping folks that are taking advantage of you like this. I actually, this guy sent me an email and said, please help me. Tell me what's wrong with this thing. And da, 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 da. And I told him. And he sent me an email. And he wrote, dear Babs, fade in. F blank blank K U. Fade out. Okay? That's the kind of email you want to wake up to, I tell you what. So I sent him a dictionary with the word candid underlined. Okay, question number 31. Through Babs wants, there are many generic blah, 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 blah. And there is niche, blah, 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 Hispanic wedding, Irish setting, airplane comedies, blah, blah, blah. Why do they do this? I have no idea. I don't know. I sometimes I think that they think that the creative world revolves around their existential ideas. I mean, I don't know. But I will tell you this. If they think they can find it and make money because it's unique and different, then that's what they're going to advertise. And I do the best I can to help them, but I don't go crazy if I can't. And the person who wrote this question, it went on a little bit, which was kind of cool. So I did 31, 31A, that kind of thing. He asked about, you know, caveat emptor and, you know, buyer beware, that kind of thing. And it's funny that he used the real estate analogy because Ed is a broker and I'm a real estate agent. I'm also a notary public. And I can tell you I've done both of those jobs and I can still notarize anything you need. But I could tell you from the let the buyer beware business that they're not going to option anything that they think that they don't think they can set up. They're going to do their best. I have a picture called Pet Sitter. The option was for 6 months. It's $6 million budget, $100,000 to the writer, I think, if it goes, WGA minimums, 2% of the shooting budget, all the, you know, the usual noise. And the actress who was supposed to star as the lead in it won't do it. So now they're rock hard place, right? Oh my goodness, my writers are not happy, right? So if you put yourself in the writer's shoes, they know going in until they get a check, this whole process does not exist to them. And I tell them that going in. So I believe that producers in their hearts are completely in the right place. They really think they're going to get it done. And most of them do get it done. All right, let's see. It looks like question 32, I skipped. Question 33. What industries, agencies does everyone go, ooh, ah? I can tell you I'm not part of them. CAA and ICM are the oohs and the ahs. 34, what in the business makes you go WTH? Oh, right, what the hell? Well, don't ask me to tell you something, and then when I tell you, you freak out. And don't put me on a pedestal either. I pick up the dog poo. I mean, I vacuum my own house. I bought a new vacuum cleaner. I'm so excited. I'm just a chick out here trying to rub two sticks together. I'm trying to trap lightning. I'm not any different or any better than you. No way, no how. Okay, 35. What makes you groan, beat your head against the desk? This kind of speaks to 34, I guess. Ed has a rule. So the question is, what makes you groan, beat your head against the desk, or make you want to beat your customer's head against a desk? That's funny. Meetings for no reason. Ed has a rule. Do not meet to shoot the breeze. Let the other guy do that. We're here to work. Followed by, you'll hear a sound. It's Ed cracking the whip. 36. Do you have a professional specialty? Yes, I do. I'm a public speaker. I do teach. This is one of my core competencies. I'm a singer. I'm a darn good rock singer. In fact, finally, I have some decent CDs that I could actually play without cringing. But that is not the point. I do have some specialties. I sing. I do extensive public speaking. I teach writers. I teach a quarterly adult screenwriters class in Sacramento at the Learning Exchange. I have a ball when I do it. We all have fun. And I think I like it, and I do it effectively, and I have good classes, mostly because I try to also put it in the perspective of real life expectations. I don't want you to piss your life away on a dream, but I don't want you to ever, ever, ever stop dreaming, because that's how things get done. And if I can do it, you can do it. Do I have an affinity or a bias? Yes, you all know I don't like profanity dogging a script. Does your agency have a profanity? We don't really like to sell gross humor. It's, first of all, it's very hard to read on the page. I read the script recently that has all of the gross elements that are very popular today. And I must tell you, I find it offensive, not in a bad way, just ew, you know, like ew. But I get it. You know, I get it. If it's got a hook and the characters are funny, it's going to go. What can you not get enough of? This is on question 37. What jobs does your company not touch, and what can you not get enough of? I won't touch period pieces if I can help it. That's not to say I won't rep the writer on them, but I know what I'm talking about when I try to pitch them. They're a very difficult pitch, and I will kick it back to the writer and say, try to get rid of as many tank scenes as you can. Try and get rid of as many costumed scenes as you can. Don't write with a lot of extras. If you have to write a period piece, please write it as an ensemble piece. We have an option by Craig Clyde, coincidentally, called The Chinese General. This script is so amazing. Oh, my Lord, it is such a great script. I did not see the ending coming. When I read the last page, I went, oh, this is fabulous. This is so cool. Oh, my gosh. Is it going to get made? Who knows? The guy who's optioned it is in love with it, so that doesn't hurt. I think I skipped a page of questions. Yes, I did. Yes, I did. Must backtrack. All right, so let's see. Where am I? Okay, so I accidentally jumped over to what I wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole. That was question 37. So let's backtrack. And since these are numbered for you, Michael's going to put them on the website. Go to question 21. Nope, we did that already. Oh, this is fun. And by the way, kids, I'm doing this without wine. You mean to tell me I'm almost done with these questions already? That was way too fast. Okay, so we don't touch period pieces if we can help it. What can I not get enough of? Question 37, great stories about ordinary people. That's what I'm always on the hunt for. What impresses you? Question 38, what impresses you about a producer and or writer? I have the top respect for wordsmiths. I could listen to Dennis Miller talk all day long on the radio. I don't care about his politics. I mean, whether you like his politics or not, that's not the point. The guy, just turn on the radio. He is the most nimble speaker on the radio. Just listen to the guy spiral around the dictionary off the cuff. It freaks me right out in a good way. I like people who are not afraid to wordsmith the craft of screenwriting. I love people who rewrite cliches. I love when I read something different on the page. I love it when I see a line, like Craig Clyde wrote something, a script called First We Dance, and the line off the top of my head, I can't remember exactly what it was, but I remember going, oh, that's so clever. It makes the page sing a little bit. It really gets you excited about being an agent. Question 39, how many times have you seen a perfectly good deal get shot right down the toilet? Oh, I'll tell you a story. I had a client who had a partner. The partner bought the rights, but the client still owned the copyright with him. And I had an option for it, and the guy turned me down because it was a zero cash option. And I was really frustrated because this chick was so excited about this script. She said, Barbara, if he gives me a no cash option 6 months, I know I can set it up. And the guy wouldn't let it happen. It was at that time, I was very, very new at this business. I started to look a little differently at teams. I started to be a little more discerning when it comes to speaking to them and hearing them and understanding what they are about and how they work together, just for my own edification. Question 39, how many times have you seen a perfectly good deal? That's what I talked to. And it says, what are the top reasons why they don't go? The top three reasons are money, and oh, did I say money? Well, it's money. That's the reason why it doesn't go. Question 40, what quality do writers need to hone on the page? It all starts and ends with voice. Voice is, you know, you guys may remember, I hope you do, and if you don't, you might be able to play it again, the show that I did about tone. I don't care for a lot of violence on a page, but if it's crafted correctly and the tone is right, I have a script called The Accomplice by Craig Sabin. He's a WGA writer I represent. Very talented guy. He's worked for HBO, DreamWorks. Very talented. He's got a big picture in the pipeline. If it funds, it's the one I mentioned to you last show. If it funds by the time I'm 90, I'll be happy. But it looks like it's going to go. And you can't believe how extraordinary it is to read about this kind of level of violence in this one script, The Accomplice, and be completely hooked buy it because of the voice of the killer and the narrative tug of the interplay between the other characters and the way the action is poised. It's really, it's as hard as it is to read, you very suddenly get it. You get why it's working. I think I covered all my questions. I'm not exactly sure. If you see that I skipped something or jumped around a little bit, I know I kind of lost my place in there a teeny bit. But if I missed something, all you have to do is post it on the thread. And by the way, if you guys hear or see something or you hear the show and it kind of prompts you into thinking of a question, oh, feel free to let anybody at Simply Scripts know, and we will take care of it for you. Let's see. I do have a little message here from Michael. It says, just as an aside, tell people to put the copyright on any version, but not the scripts they send to an agent. Yeah, you can put the copyright. He's actually right here. I stand corrected. Copyright is important for the folks who read your work that are not industry folk. But when you send it to people like me or producers, we think that that's very amateurish, so don't do it. And I was told this, and I always follow that rule. I kind of don't even know why I follow it, but I do because it's tradition. And so as a result, if you could take your copyright information off of there when you pitch someone like myself or a producer or a director, that's important. I think I kind of find it offensive, maybe. Who knows? I never did. I just thought, you know, okay, next, let me get to the next page. As long as I see 12-point career font, I'm pretty happy. All right, kids, this is Babs Buzz. I'm going to wind it up for today. I will see you guys, I think, in December. I'm not sure what Michael has planned. If not, I will for sure see you in January. We're having a great time with the show. If you'd like us to keep it going, tell Michael. And be specific if you'd like to see the show keep going. I'm happy to do it. Just tell us what you'd like to talk about. If you have ideas, my gosh, I'm so open to that. This is Babs for Babs Buzz, telling you to remember to write, to rewrite, and live your life. Peace.